I ended last week's service with words from the Reverend Wayne Arneson. And I met Wayne years ago. Actually, I was interviewing with this committee that decided whether or not you could be a minister. And it was sort of a big deal, as you might expect. And you'd gone through all the schooling, and you'd accumulated all these student loans, and then you had to go before these seven people, and they got to say yay or nay. And so Wayne was on that committee and said hi and welcomed me. And I was sort of intimidated, not just because of the committee, because Wayne was famous, because he had these words in the back of the hymnal that I had heard so many times. My standard of fame is a little low, I suppose. And but it's Wayne. And then a couple years ago, Wayne and I started serving on a committee together. And I've gotten to know him as a person and as a friend. And he's not intimidating at all. He's gentle and sweet. And he's been through some things that I've been through, and we've had a chance to talk about those things. And he doesn't have answers, even though he's been around the block quite a few more times than I have. He's nearing the end of his career in ministry and wise, but mostly he just listens and says, yeah, you're not alone. And so I think now of this very kind person rather than this sort of whoa person when I hear or say those words, which I ended last week's service on strength in hard times with. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. You're not alone. I'm talking about resilience and what it takes to get through. And there aren't easy answers. Often the problems that we face are difficult and there is no good solution and it's just hard. But if we know that we are not alone, if we have one another, there is no end to what we can do. Take courage, friends. I met with a group of seniors here in the church, as I do each month, over at Wesley Willows at the beginning of the month, and I asked, what gives you resilience? What gives you strength to get through hard times? And person after person after person around the table said, my friends. My friends. And in fact, they would point to one another around the table and said, this person with whom I've been friends with for 60 years is where I get resilience, where I get the strength to carry on. And that's true, isn't it, for each of us? When things are tough and we reach out and somebody is there for us, or somebody reaches out and they don't even know that we need them to, and yet there they are, we feel that sense of connection. That's how resilience happens. But I worry sometimes about the culture that we live in, for we live in a lonely culture where we are isolated and apart, distracted, too busy to notice that somebody needs us or that we need anything ourselves. And I worry that my generation may not have the kind of resilient friendships that my grandparents' generation did, those multi-decade long connections. Sometimes I think we'll be fine, we've got them, and sometimes I wonder if we're too busy filling the empty places of our lives with distractions and addictions and denial. I wonder that we might miss it. Because the difference between getting that connection and not getting it is so huge. It's everything. There's a song on the radio that some of you have heard if you listen to the same radio stations I listen to, by Maroon 5. The chorus, I was there for you in your darkest times. I was there for you in your darkest nights. But I wonder, where were you when I was at my worst, down on my knees, and you said you had my back? I wonder, where were you? That difference between when we reach out and we make that connection and when we don't is everything. A friendship where you make that connection at that critical moment, that friendship becomes strong in a way that can never be taken away. But when you miss it, something is never quite the same. That's really important, that we have that kind of connection, that friendship that holds us together. Because when we have that, when we have that power of resilience from connection, we become something different, something stronger and more beautiful. Little blue and little yellow come together, they make something different. And then they learn that they can come apart and together, and that beauty, that creativity that happens when people share with one another is something powerful and unique. When I moved to Colorado about 12 years ago to serve the congregation there, I learned about aspen trees. Some of you know this. I was amazed. Trees, usually we think, well, each tree is a tree. That's one plant, but not aspen trees. The whole grove of aspen trees is one plant. The roots are all the same. It's not different trees with the roots connected. It's one plant, and each tree is coming up from the same roots. And thus, aspen trees, though they're threatened now by climate change, and we'll talk about that in a couple weeks, aspen trees, aspen groves, are some of the oldest living things on the earth, for they have that power of resilience that comes from being connected to each other. It's amazing. It's amazing. Thousands and thousands of years old. And one tree comes down, but a new one comes up from the same plant. It's a little scary, though, isn't it, to be so dependent on one another. Blue and yellow are a little frightening when they, where did you go, to their parents. And we live in this culture of individualism. In fact, we hear this message, to be a mature person is to stand on your own. That is total fiction. To be a mature person is to know you need one another. Really. But we have this culture that says that we got to be strong by ourselves and have this sense of individualism, but that is not real and not true. We Unitarian Universalists are particularly vulnerable to this illusion of individualism. Our religious forebears, Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, talked and wrote about self-reliance, and how they were going to go out in the woods and they were going to explore nature themselves and figure out what was true. Thoreau talked about that. I'm going to go off. And then every Sunday night, he came home to Emerson's house for dinner. They wrote about this sense of individualism, but how they actually lived was in community. They gathered in each other's homes and talked about books and ideas and shared meals and comforted each other in their grief. And some of them went off and tried to start a farm together. They didn't really know how to farm, so it didn't quite work, but they tried to be together, to be together. So we have to remember the full story when we talk about our own forebears. We talk about our individual conscience, but we need one another in that sense of resilience, of community. 2,500 years ago, the Greek philosopher Aristotle talked about the key virtues of the human life, courage and wisdom and justice. And he said that the way that you know that someone has those kinds of virtues is how they are as a friend. That friendship was the way that one ought to live. And that people who were good friends to one another exhibited most clearly the key virtues of the human life. And he said that the only way that you could have a civic society, a democracy where people made decisions together, where people were free in any kind of way, was if they were friends. If people had that spirit of friendship and civility, that what is friendship between some becomes a way of being civil together in the political world. And without that, the city-state, the republic, would collapse. This idea that we are bound together by our mutual affection for one another, and that it is only that that makes community possible, is at the core of what covenanted religious community is about. It's about what the church is about. It's why we're gathered together. This church. For 174 years, this church has ridden out the storms of life, wars, depressions, controversies, changes in the religious environment and in the city, in the people who are here. And yet there is this resilience among you that is remarkable. Is what I noticed when I first came to be your minister those many years ago now, how resilient you are, how tough. And as I have gotten to know your lives, I see how you do that. Some of you have been through really bad stuff, hard things. and there is resilience and strength in you as individuals and in the way that you care for each other. That's how it happens. That friendship that folks spoke of over many decades. And I see what you do for each other, the way you love each other and are kind, the way you bring a meal or come to help with a reception for a family in grief, the way that you volunteer for someone who's gotten confused and needs help with their lives. I see the way that you march and tutor and serve food, and the way that you smile at each other and are kind, help one another raise their children and take care of your parents, the way that you are there for each other, the love that you show for each other. And it is remarkable. It's what makes community real. It's amazing, and I love you for it. And this church, for its vision and its strength, its wisdom and its compassion, and you. I was talking to a colleague of mine a couple weeks ago about this and how much I love this church and you all, and he said to me, "Do you tell them that?" And I said, "Not often enough. I love you, and I want you to know that, and the way that you love each other matters so much to each other, to me, and to the world." To the world, hands joined together, hearts beat as one. We love one another, we are there for one another so that we might have the resilience to get through the hard times in our own lives, and that's good, that's valuable. But it is our theology, our commitment, our practice that it doesn't stop there. It doesn't end at the walls of the building or at the edges of our own bodies. But we take the love that we experience here at our best, and we take that out into the world to make the world better. Cornel West said that justice is what love looks like in public. What love looks like in public is justice. And it is our vision that we take the love that we experience here and that we try to practice here, that we cultivate and work at here, and take it out into the world for justice, for a wider vision. That's who we are. 50 years ago yesterday, on the 7th of March, 1965, Martin Luther King and other civil rights activists tried to have a march. They tried to march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, a bridge named for a member of the Ku Klux Klan, still to this day. And they were met there by police who beat them bloody, Bloody Sunday. And it galvanized the nation. Some of you remember it because you saw it with your own eyes. Others of us have only seen the footage, and that is terrifying enough. The next day, Dr. King issued a call to religious leaders around the country to come to Alabama and join in the next march. And people came from all kinds of different religious traditions, and Unitarian Universalists came. Hundreds of Unitarian Universalist ministers, a larger percentage of Unitarian Universalist ministers went than as a percentage of any other denomination in the country. We went. One of the ministers who went was the Reverend James Reeb, who was serving the poor and the destitute in the city of Boston. And he went to Selma. He arrived on the 9th of March, and he had dinner with some other minister, friends of his. And as they were leaving the cafe, they were set upon by a group of white supremacists who beat them with sticks and bats, hit Jim Reeb in the head. 2 days later, he died in the hospital. And it galvanized the country even more. A white minister had gone to help register people to vote and had been murdered. His killers were acquitted for their crime by an all-white jury in Alabama in 1965. A few weeks later, a Unitarian Universalist laywoman, Viola Liuzzo, who is a member of our congregation in Detroit, a mother of five, who had worked for equal rights and civil rights and economic justice in Detroit and marched and been arrested before and was a committed activist because of her faith, went to Alabama to help with the civil rights movement. She's giving a ride to a voting rights activist, a young black man, from one city to another in her car. She had driven from Detroit down to Alabama. They were spotted by the Ku Klux Klan, who saw a white woman and a black man in a car together and took out their shotguns and killed her. We talk about people who went, who gave their lives for the cause of love. The call was issued and answered. And because of the way in which it was answered by our own people, we were changed as a religious movement. We'd done racial justice work before. We'd supported the sit-ins 10 years prior. We'd been there, but in a way that was powerful. Selma changed who we are and what we are about. And it was because of that community of resilience that they were both able to answer the call and then to respond to what happened. It changed us. It starts when you say we, and you know who you mean, and each time you mean one more. A wider vision of who we are and what we are for. Love in public. To be willing to risk for the sake of our vision, for the sake of our love. It goes on one at a time, and each time you mean one more. A community of resilience is the only way to make justice in the world, the only thing that has the power to withstand the challenges, to support the people doing the work, and to spread that out into the world. It's the only way to have accountability to others and to have that spirit of friendship that makes life not just possible, but sweet and beautiful. It's not abstract. It's real. It's powerful. But real connection and friendship, that the struggle is ours because we are bound together. It's not a theory that some people are equal. It's a reality that I am in relationship with these people, with other lives who are my brothers and sisters and kin in the world. Tiquero, I love you because you cry out for justice. I love you because you cry out for justice. We are more than two. We are love. When you are together in that way, you are more than two. You have the power to spread that love out into the world and change it when your shout is for justice. This church is more than two. When folks go out into the world on behalf of their love here to tutor or rally or organize or feed the needy, to just live lives of kindness and decency day by day in the way they are a citizen, a parent, a friend, that is more than two, more than one. It is us out in the world. And when I go out on your behalf to do those things, I know that I take your spirit with me in the only way it can be. It's how we make a community of resilience when we love one another and are there for one another, and thus for the world. Margaret Mead said, and I know you probably know this quotation well, you could say it with me, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. The only thing that ever has. Citizenship is founded on the premise of friendship, our affection for one another as human beings, as siblings in life and love. It is upon this that the changing of the world depends, and upon this that the sweetness and the beauty and the strength of our own lives depends, this community of resilience. The good news is that this is true and real, and that we can feel it and live it and do it. It's not abstract, it's real. We've done it before, we can do it again. Change the world, change our lives through our connection with one another. Become more than we would be by ourselves. Be more, much more than two. This is how we are changed and how the world is changed. It is how we overcome the challenges of the world when we walk hand in hand. It is how the world is changed. We walk hand in hand, hearts beat as one. Let's sing together. We shall overcome. Please rise and bind your spirit.